From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And welcome, Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor. Well, we're going to be talking later in the show to Zafar Bangash. Zafar Bangash is a brilliant analyst of affairs in the Middle East. Of course, he is an Islamic scholar, highly respected around the world. And, of course, he's also a man of strong opinions, and most of them right on the mark. The issue where we want to go into with Zafar is this development. There's been a combination of stories. There's been an attack on a courthouse in Islamic Republic of Iran, just nearby, across the border, there's been armed groups formed that are sort of just come out of the blue, they sort of on schedule according to political need. It's from the area of Pakistan called Baluchistan. There are, of course, this population is on both sides of the border, and you can imagine any time you have a population which has its own culture, language, political history, and they're on two sides of a border, you have, not only do you have an inherent sort of political issue to be addressed by mature elements, one hopes, but also it presents for people who want to make trouble a real opportunity. And there are rumors that both India and Israel may be involved in this question. So that makes it important for us to speak to Zafar Bangash, and that'll be approximately 11:30. We are also going to be speaking to Zafar about the prime minister who is in prison, Imran Khan, whose government was removed pretty much at the behest of the U.S., and that's a matter that we want to know about. There's on August the 5th, which is not that far away, there is a political action being scheduled in Pakistan by the majority party. That would be the party of led by, I should put it that way, majority party of Pakistan, and that would be the party of Imran Khan. He is in a prison, as is his wife. There, I have seen statements that have been issued in his name. I assume he's in communication in some ways with the outside world. He's having trouble, of course, being incarcerated and by a hostile government. He's in a pretty dangerous situation, but he has said that August the 5th is an important test for his party. And so we will be asking Zafar such questions as how this is going to play out, but also what is going on in the region. What does the party of Imran Khan say about the ongoing crisis that brought about by his removal and being placed in prison? I have to say, by the way, that Pakistan has sort of an unfortunate record of the army removing governments. And there are places in the world where they say there's an army that has a country, and there's, there are some places, countries have armies, but Pakistan is one of the places where being a general means a lot more than being a prime minister. And there's been a strong popular struggle against this phenomenon in Pakistan. The one that I remember most dramatically was Benazir Bhutto, who was a social democrat, and he was not a militarist, and he was trying to bring about progressive reform in the country. And he was eventually hanged. And he was, the theory is that he was first put in prison, but the theory about why they chose capital punishment, hanging, was that the general who took power was somewhat egotistical, as generals tend to be. And he was called by Bhutto a chocolate soldier, and that hurt his feelings. So Bhutto was hanged. Of course, his daughter later became prime minister, and she was assassinated. So it's quite a history Pakistan has on this matter. And of course, it's just recently had there's been a flare-up near war, a war of a type. It definitely was war activity and of exchange between India and Pakistan, which I guess brings us to discussing Donald Trump, because he claimed to have been the peacemaker in that matter. And this is a phenomenon you want to watch very closely. And because Canada and other states tend to play along with Trump, despite all the negative publicity, and every editorialist feels quite free to mock him, and cartoonists have a field day. The fact is that after all the laughter is over, he still gets his way. And as you may or may not know, there's a laughable phenomenon. He's expecting to get the Nobel Peace Prize. He expects to get this prize because his interventions. And we want to call attention, by the way, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM, Toronto. We want to call attention to the phenomena, which needs to be really actually noted, underlined, and studied, because what is going on, I mentioned the Baluchistan issue. There's a border issue, India-Pakistan, there's a border issue, Iran, Baluchistan. And currently there's another sort of near war about between Cambodia and Thailand. And then we all know the Gaza matter. Then there is also Ukraine. And what you will find is that Trump is in the middle of all these things. And lo and behold, he is called the peacemaker. So you start to get suspicious about who started these conflicts in each instance, because the third party, you know, in crime, they say, well, you know, if you have two parties are fighting in some way, and a third party enters, the third party is the suspicious one, and is certainly the one that you hold responsible. And also you wonder, did he have an instigating role? People are comfortable with the idea that Trump can now say, I'm the mediator between Cambodia, Thailand. He said, I called him up. I watched him yesterday. I called him up. He interrupted a golf game. He called him up. And he said, this thing has to stop. So they, both parties said, the Americans say we have to stop. So that means that there will be some kind of temporary situation. But notice what happens is that now you have the U.S. is going to come and sort it out. And if you will follow closely, each time that the U.S. comes to be the peacemaker, they also bring business ideas. And in every one of these matters in which Trump has introduced himself, and with the agreement of other parties, is that the U.S. has to get something out of the deal. He recently, now I got to throw another one in, Congo and Rwanda, for years, Rwanda has been occupying eastern Congo. They don't say they are, but there's a group there called M23 that could not be there unless they were operating out of Rwanda and had sufficient funds and weapons. And lo and behold, Rwanda has been doing very well in rare earth and in various minerals. And the prime material used in making cell phones is produced in eastern, the minerals are in eastern Congo, but the extraction and profit has been going through Rwanda. Now, Trump is between the parties and trying to, he says, sort it out. And the U.S. will get the corner on all those minerals. And it's patent. If you recall, he also has put himself in the Ukraine situation and says he's going, that any peace deal will have to involve the U.S. profiting. And yet, and it is accepted that this is done in broad daylight in front of everybody. And actually, Canada, nobody has any objection. They say, oh, so somebody, there's a problem and we have to have intervention. And it doesn't, we don't mean the United Nations. We don't mean neighboring states or people sharing the same language, same culture, whatnot, who in the region who would, you would think would be the natural group to solve anything. Instead, it is this great power. So, the model I'm talking about is a model, an interventionist model, a regime change model, and a super profit model under the label peacemaking. And actually, it's not peacemaking more than anything more than diktat. It'll be the way that the intervener says it will be, because that's, you know, if you call, for example, as labor and capital get into a fight with each other, they say, well, okay, we have to have a mediator. And that mediator will say, this is how it's going to go. And then the two unhappy sides will say, yes, we're going to do what the mediator says. So you have a naked interventionist policy in which the world, Canada doesn't complain. Canada thinks it's great that Trump is putting his nose into the situation in Cambodia, situation in Ukraine. There's an old joke about prize fighters where the guy in the corner says to his fighter, you're doing great, you're winning. And he says, well, somebody is really beating me up. You better watch the referee, because he knows he's taking the punches. It's the referee, the U.S. calling itself the referee, calling itself the mediator, etc., that is actually the main problem. And they may also be the instigator. That is, you egg one, you through your intelligence forces and various inducements, secret agreements, you get one party to attack the other, then you come and say, well, I'm going to help you out. This is the best, this is what I'm going to do for you. And, of course, being a superpower, people have to go along. Now, we have this trade agreement and coming in Europe. And if you didn't watch, you really ought to. Trump was playing golf in Scotland, and he invited the von Leyden, you don't have to know, this is somebody with noble blood, to come and talk to him. He took time out from golf to set a deal with the European Union, a trade deal, and it's going to be very disruptive. But the element, if you were listening to the statement by Trump, and it's always, frankly, it's fun. It's rather like listening to a sports commentator rather than a political person. He pops off in every direction, and it can be quite revealing, because he's not a scripted autocrat. He's one who likes to talk. And he said that the element, the word came up, China, and that's coming up with Canada. Canada cannot say publicly to its own population, we will do what he says. The model that Trump is building is an adversarial model in economics. So when people talk about trade routes and supply chains, the U.S. model, and it's not Trump's, by the way. Joe Biden had the same position. It is a model to disrupt and what has been developing over the past 20 years, which is a growing economy in developing countries who are now doing business with one another, which is one of the reasons why the U.S. is so concerned. So their policy is to break that up and to dictate what's going to be, what trade relations between Canada and China will be, what trade relations between Europe and China will be, and Japan. They're putting maximum pressure on Japan. Japan did not want to go along with this, but they are an occupied country. The U.S. is still there. They have military personnel there. And they're going to try to do the same, and I suspect they'll succeed with South Korea, which is occupied. Remember that there are 35,000 American troops in South Korea. And why are they there? Well, because World War II ended, and they didn't go home. They stayed. And Jimmy Carter once suggested maybe they should go home, and he was practically overthrown for that. America went berserk. All the editorial writers said, what are you talking about? We got to stay in South Korea. How would the South Koreans live without us? They often ask themselves the same question. I remind you also, the Korean War never ended. All we have is an armistice. It's still actually, the war is officially on. It's just that they have, because there's no treaty. It was never a settled view of what the Korean Peninsula is and who it belongs to. The U.S. plan is that they will eventually take the whole of the peninsula. Unfortunately for them, the leader of North Korea took it upon himself to build a nuclear weapon, and so they're quieter about that. But they haven't given up on the project. At any rate, to go back, Donald Trump laid it out clear. All of his trade agreements are to be part of he didn't use this word again, but it is often used, Fortress America. If you make a trade agreement with the U.S., it is punitive towards someone else, which is always considered the way you make wars. That is, instead of saying, well, we're going to do trade with each other and we'll go by these rules, if you target a third party, that's pre-war. You're setting the stage for something beyond economic war. And of course, U.S. has, we always like to remind everybody, 800 bases. I'm going to tag one other thing that I saw that Trump said yesterday, which was amusing. He's against wind power. He doesn't like that. He says it's ugly. And he's against electric vehicles and such. He likes oil and gas. He's an oil and gas man. And so now it turns out so is Carney. So get ready for that. But just on the aesthetic level, has he ever seen an oil derrick? If you travel in the Southwest, oil derricks are not pretty. And he said, by the way, that windmills are bad for the environment. Two-thirds of the oil derricks of the Southwest are dead. They're just sitting there, destroying the environment. And the guys who, if you look into who built them, you ever heard the word gusher? They would just let her blast. and oil would pour all over the place until they could figure out how to put a cap on it and start making money. And so here we have this character, President of the United States, and he thinks windmills are ugly. And well, drive up and down Central Valley, California, and on each side, you'll see your oil derricks, particularly when you get around Bakersfield. It's just something which no one remarks on. He simply, pops off, and everybody says, oh, I guess he's right. There won't be any windmills. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Now, great, brilliant singer-songwriter, Tom Lehrer, Harvard mathematician, but a legend in music and popular music. Well, let's put it this, music for the for those who are wide awake. Brilliant man of the late 50s and 60s. He died at the age of 96. And we have some of his, I think the one about Wernher von Braun, which was probably appropriate, and we'll come back and talk some more, and then later we'll be talking to Zafar Bengash.
And what is it that put America in the forefront of the nuclear nations? And what is it that will make it possible to spend $20 billion of your money to put some clown on the moon? Well, it was good old American know-how, that's what. As provided by good old Americans like Dr. Wernher von Braun. Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. A Nazi schmatzi, says Wernher von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical, say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Wernher von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Wernher von Braun.